everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody. And every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
KFI AM 640. You're listening to the John Cobell Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the KFI News special, Hate, Modern Antisemitism. I'm Steve Gregory.
This program may contain content not suitable for everyone. Discretion advised.
In the last hour, you heard about the state of antisemitism throughout Southern California. Nationwide, organizations like the American Jewish Committee are monitoring antisemitic activity throughout the United States and around the world. Ted Deutsch is the chief executive officer of the AJC, and in December of 2020 was part of a White House summit on antisemitism. I asked him about his visit to the White House and the current state of antisemitism in the U.S.
We know that antisemitism continues to rise. We saw that in the FBI numbers that have just been released, but AJC also has released a survey that is really alarming, which shows not just the number of anti-Semitic attacks, but the impact that it's having on the community and on America as a whole. 90% of the people in America overall believe that anti-Semitism is a serious problem. And 4 in 5 Jews say that anti-Semitism has increased over the last 5 years. And then finally, most concerning, over 40% of Jews living in America feel less secure today than they did just a year ago. It's an enormous problem, not only for the Jewish community, because anti-Semitism never just stops with the Jews. This is a problem that impacts other minority groups, society as a whole, and ultimately the democracy that we live in that allows us to live free.
And in that roundtable, Ted, did you discuss the causes, the root issues, and why the spike in these hate crimes and just hate in general?
There was a conversation about how this hatred is allowed to spread. Ultimately, anti-Semitism, Jew hatred, is a conspiracy theory, and it's existed for thousands of years. And the impact of anti-Semitism on the Jewish community, as I said, is real. We come to this when someone with millions of followers on social media tweets and shares vitriolic hatred of Jews, it invites the anti-Semites who have been under their rocks to come out into public. It normalizes anti-Semitism. It says that it's somehow okay to unfurl banners over highway bridges and to distribute anti-Semitic literature and to shine anti-Semitic statements flat on the sides of buildings. That's the challenge that we have. So it's not a question of where it comes from. Look, there's a spike in the conspiracy, the spreading of conspiracy theories. We saw this through COVID in particular, but at this moment, we've seen the spread because of the prevalence of anti-Semitism on social media, the fact that social media companies need to do more to enforce their own rules against this kind of hate speech that causes trouble in society and poses a threat to the community.
And what were solutions? Any solutions offered at this roundtable?
Sure. There were lots of suggestions, some to deal with the immediate threat and the need to have available resources to harden Jewish facilities. But beyond that, we need a national plan. And AJC has worked with the White House to really move forward on a whole of government approach. Our call to action against anti-Semitism provides ways for every sector of government to fight anti-Jewish hatred. And this effort that's been launched by the administration as a result of the meeting we had will lead, we hope, to a real national action plan that will provide ways for the federal government, state governments, businesses, law enforcement, all of them to come up with ideas to combat this vile hatred that again, poses a risk to society as a whole.
Wouldn't you agree that this all starts in the home? That maybe there's not enough being done to educate young people on hate, its impact, the overall disintegration of values. And I mean, don't you think it really starts in the home?
Well, it's interesting. It's a really interesting question. On the one hand, sure, but what does that even mean anymore? Again, it's not just what gets passed on in a family setting from parents to kids. It's what kids are seeing every day on social media and the impact that has. But of course, education is a huge part of this. What we've found is that there are so many of these anti-Semitic tropes, so much language that gets used that again comes from these long-standing conspiracy theories that people often don't even recognize as anti-Semitism. They don't know the impact it has. That's why AJC put out a document called Translate Hate, just to give people a better understanding of how the words that are said, words that they may learn at home, words that they may learn by their spending time on the internet, that those words have real impact. And it's true. That's true, by the way, across all forms of hatred. Education is key in helping people understand how words can lead to actions lead to violence. And in the case of the Jewish community, that violence has often led to expulsion from countries. It led to the near annihilation of the entire Jewish people during the Holocaust. That's why education is such a key. And that does start at home. Absolutely.
Social media. I know I was talking with folks from the Wiesenthal Center, and social media has played such a huge role in this, as you mentioned. What kinds of conversations and dialogues have you had with the platforms, the people that run these platforms? Are they amenable to your solutions? Are they at least letting you have a seat at the table?
The good news is social media companies have usually robust hate speech policies, certainly relative to where they were just a few years ago. But given the number of American Jews who have experienced anti-Semitism online, which is well more than half, 85% of young people, We have to do more than just provide lip service. The Facebook and Twitter and other companies there's a crossroads between free speech and hate speech, and they have to decide which road we're on, and making sure that they're not making it easy for people to transmit hate speech that can lead to violence is a key part of what they do. So look, we think they can remove anti-Semitic content that violates their own policies. They can strengthen their own hate speech policies to include all forms of anti-Semitism. There's a modern form of anti-Semitism that's defined, there's a working definition of that the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance has put out that's been adopted by dozens of countries. Social media companies could adopt that. They could ensure greater transparency in drafting their policies, their algorithms that are used to send the information directly to your feed. There's more transparency that can be provided there to make sure that it's not just sending more and more hatred to further the aims of the anti-Semites, the hate mongers, others who are trying to use their technology. So there's a lot more. Community standards, I think, is something that could help a great deal. And we've had conversations, we have ongoing conversations with social media companies, and we've had successes. And we, in terms of taking down Holocaust denial and addressing some of those challenges, but there's a lot more that can be done. Make it easier to report anti-Semitism. The systems that are in place, the moderation systems, to make sure that they're able to identify coded anti-Semitism and hate speech. All of these things, we know the kinds of things that can be done, and we're working as best we can to encourage them to do it. But ultimately, there's real responsibility that they have to take action themselves.
You can hear the complete interview with Ted Deutsch by downloading the companion podcast to this program on the iHeartRadio app. Coming up, we speak with an Asian American artist who uses his brush on the walls of buildings in downtown Los Angeles to support the Jews. But first, this is the KFI News special, Hate, Modern Anti-Semitism, on KFI AM 640.
You're listening to John Kobelt on demand from KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. I'm Steve Gregory, and this is the KFI News special, Hate, Modern Anti-Semitism. Anytime there's advocacy for a marginalized group or a worthy cause, an artist usually isn't too far away. Andrew Hem was born during his parents' flight from Cambodia following the Khmer Rouge genocide. Hem was always fascinated by graffiti and developed a unique style of using blues and reds to bring his impressions of culture to life. He is also an accomplished muralist who paid tribute to a woman who was a Holocaust rescuer.
We're down here in a very busy street in the Arts District, downtown Los Angeles. We're at the intersection of Santa Fe and 6th Street. Tell us what we're looking at.
This is a mural dedicated to Irene Opdyke. And for those of you who don't know, she's a Polish nurse who saved 12 Jews from the Nazis. And she just helped protect them and just kept them safe during the whole Nazi time.
So what did you learn about her before you put brush to wall?
I learned that she just, you know, she was a hero. And for me, like, I didn't know about her. And I feel like most people, probably my age bracket, doesn't either. So I hope that this mural, since there's not that much people my age who knows about her, that it just brings more awareness to her and her heroic deeds.
So let's step back for a moment. I want you to give us a word picture of what we're looking at, including the colors, because the colors are so bright. They're pastel in nature to me.
Yeah.
But describe the colors and what your inspiration was for these specific colors.
I was given, because, you know, there's not that much pictures of her online, so I was given a handful of images, and they're all black and white. For me, I saw this black and white, and I just wanted to create vibrancy to it, and just not just this monochromatic kind of dull depiction. So how do I make this vibrant? And I'm obsessed with colors. I love colors. So I think it I think it was a challenge for me just trying to transfer this black and white to vivid colors. But I chose a lot of blues. I love blues, greens, pinks, reds, a lot of primary colors that I just kind of mix together and just try to create this harmonic imagery. Yeah.
So talk about it, because you actually, when you talk about a mural, it in the scope of it, in the size of it, yeah. It's very large, but yeah. It's got a bunch of little motifs in it.
Yeah.
So let's start. I really am curious about this. We have on the bottom left side, as you look from the street, it's purple, and you've got seven individuals sitting around a coffee right. table.
Okay, well, these seven individuals are people that she saved. And they're obviously in a time bracket where it's black and white. So I didn't want to take too far off of that whole monochromatic feel. So I want to keep it monochromatic, but with a little slight hints of purples and pinks, just to show that is a really dated imagery. And I wanted to make it abstract too. So there's a lot of just like triangular shapes, a lot of blocks and squares. But it starts off monochromatic, then as it shoots out to where her holding it, it's more of a kind of modern day, how she is now. So obviously it's a brighter and more vivid in colors.
Did you have a photo of these seven individuals?
I did.
Is this derived right from the photo?
From reference, yes. This is from reference. And since the image was smaller, you know, I felt like if I were to make it more detailed, it'll take away from her. So I wanted to make it less readable, so it becomes like a third or fourth read. And I wanted the focus to be on her, and then, you know, what she's holding.
It's interesting to see that, you know, and knowing now that these seven people were saved by her. Do you know the circumstances around how that happened?
I just know that she saved them. Like she hid them away. She hid them away, and then once they were eventually found, she offered herself as a favor to keep them safe. In a way that she sacrificed her own body to protect these people, which was very heroic.
Well, when you look at the colors you've given her, is there any significance to these sort of, and I, for lack of a better title for it, I'm looking at like peach and kind of a, you know, orangey peach. Is that a specific color that you imagined her?
You know, part of the process was I envisioned some of this color in my head, kind of like this peach color. But then as it got to the wall, I added oranges and I added stuff. So it just gives it more of a variation of color, but it's also in the same value. But it just so it's not just a solid pink, I just improvise and add orange and purples and certain colors. But I feel like a majority of the color was in my head already. As I got to the wall, I added spontaneous colors just to make it more lively.
I noticed butterflies.
Yeah. So the butterflies is supposed to symbolize Irene, because there's a lot of people in the piece. So I wanted to since there's a timeline of when she was younger and when she was older, I wanted the butterfly to show the viewers, okay, this is her when she was younger, this is her when older, just so that they know this is Irene and not somebody she saved.
Got it. So the butterfly is a reference point.
Exactly, yeah.
So then as we look back here, tell us what it says there. What are the letters that say in the middle?
Well, that's the company that contacted me, the Righteous Among the Nations Global Mural Project. They asked me if I was interested in doing this piece and this location. And I think oftentimes, you know, I do murals and it's kind of like, hey, you know, do what you want, you know, paint what you want. So I felt like this was a special thing to do where, you know, there's a subject matter and there's like a powerful subject matter. So so I was more than happy to do this.
What about the other side? Can we go? Yeah. I'm curious here as we walk through, what was this picture denoting that you saw?
Well, this is somebody that she saved, and then it seems like she's just showing this complete love to this human being. And, you know, she's kissing her on the cheek, somewhat similar to what a parent would do to their own child. But I think it's very special how, you know, she's how much she loves somebody like that.
I notice you also have the words art over hate.
Yeah.
Tell me why that's important for you.
Well, I think right now, you know, ever since COVID, you know, people see more. Well, I feel like anytime there's a natural disaster or anything, people tend to have hate over certain race that they feel like responsible. With 9/11, you know, there was a lot of attacks on Middle Eastern. With COVID, there was a lot of attacks on Asian Americans. So the first mural I did for them was during COVID. It was Stop Asian Hate. And they reached out to me again and said, hey, we would like to do another kind of hate campaign, and would you be interested in this? And this is my second time working for them. Both times are just against hate.
The entire interview with Andrew Hamm is on the companion podcast to this program and can be downloaded on the iHeartRadio app. Coming up, an exclusive tour of the only traveling exhibit of Auschwitz. But first, this is the KFI News special, Hate, Modern Anti-Semitism on KFI AM 640.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota. Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi on a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the KFI News special, Hate, Modern Anti-Semitism. I'm Steve Gregory. One of the most well-known and iconic symbols of the Holocaust is Auschwitz, the concentration and extermination camp located in southern Poland. Dr. Michael Barenbaum's with the American Jewish University in Los Angeles, but was also commissioned to curate the only worldwide traveling exhibition of Auschwitz. He took us on a personal tour of the exhibit while it was being installed at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. Where do you start? Did Auschwitz tell you what they're going to give you, or did you request items from them?
I always start backwards. If you ask me how I create an exhibition, I always say you have to answer four questions. What, where, with what, and how. What do you want to say? And where do you want to say it? And where is not only location physically, but its location in time? Meaning, we're at a time, for example, where some of the themes of the Holocaust are echoed, unfortunately, in contemporary life. So you have a section on judgment, and you hear the concept of crimes against humanity. Crimes against humanity were abstract until the invasion of Ukraine. When you hear the president talk about crimes of humanity, you hear the president of European countries, you hear Macron, you hear the prime minister of Britain, the chancellor of Germany, all talking about crimes against humanity. The origin of that is here. Wars of aggression, again, echoes in certain respects. It's not to say that Russia is committing a Holocaust. It's saying that you have echoes, faint and sometimes vivid echoes. So I start with, what do we have to say? Then I say, where are we saying it? Where is the place and time? And also the location. So in the Reagan Library, we have a very unique thing, because this was done by government. This was all perpetrated by Nazi German government. There were German laws, the German army, the German bureaucracy, the German Justice Department, the German Foreign Ministry, the German army. All of these were instrumentalities of the state. So we have to pay attention to the fact that what is the, so far, the great achievement of America, which is that the state is restrained by checks and balances, by respect for human dignity and human decency, by the notion of inalienable rights. So where has a very particular poignancy in this place at this time? Also, at this time, we're doing something else, which is, we are in the transitionary moment, the last moment in the life of survivors. Transition from lived history to historical memory, and the institution becomes the heir of the survivors. With what? I come with a shopping list. They say yes and no. And sometimes, you know, if they don't have the fruit you want, you choose another fruit. If they're not willing to sell you the fruit that they have, in this case, lend us the fruit that they have, use a different artifact. So, for example, we haven't installed it. It's not going to be installed. We could have asked for 1,000 shoes. Or we could have asked, and we did ask, for one colored shoe to illustrate. And we have a beautiful woman's red shoe. High heels. And you think of, in Washington, we have 5,000 shoes. And we use a poem, "We are the shoes of grandparents and grandchildren from Paris, Prague, and Amsterdam." And because we are made of fiber and leather and not of flesh and blood, each of us avoided the hellfire. The shoes were saved, but not the people who wore them. So we think of the one red shoe in a background of thousands of shoes. Think, who is this woman? Did she go dancing in these shoes? Was she a stunning model? Was she, what was her life? What is it that gets you to put on red shoes? Certainly not to go to a funeral. Certainly not to go to your doom.
When we were walking through, you were gracious enough to give us a personal tour of the exhibit as it's going up. And one of the things that struck me, you stopped us at a chart on a wall. And that chart was, I assume, the way it looked, was a government document. And that document, if I heard you correctly, was sort of the criteria in which someone was labeled a Jew.
The Nazis had a problem. The problem was that essentially they came with an anti-Semitic agenda, which targeted the Jews. But then you got to ask yourself the question, who are the Jews? And what they did is to divide the population by full Jews, three-quarter Jews, based on the religion of your grandparents, half-Jews, quarter-Jews, eighth-Jews. Because how many great-grandparents do you have? You have eight. And essentially, they drew a demarcation line. This was racism incarnate, because it was not by the identity you held, the values you practiced, the traditions you embraced, the faith that you worshipped. It was on the religion of your grandparents, namely what was within your blood. And that chart was a way to determine who was and who was not a Jew, who was to be discriminated against, and who was going to be a target of oppression. Later on, they discovered they had a second problem, which is, unlike, for example, black skin or unlike Asian eyes, Jews look many different ways. So they had to mark the Jews. That's when they put on the yellow star in most countries, or in Poland they used the white armband, to determine who was a Jew. It's called symbolization and identification. They forced you to wear a Jewish star so they knew whom to target. That's a government chart. The rule of a Jewish star was a government decree, and therefore they knew who to target and how to target them.
You said that was racism incarnate.
Racism incarnate is what condemns you. Remember, what is Martin Luther King's great line? I want people to be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. What is the opposite of racism? When we judge people by who they are in terms of the content of their character, their artistry, their ability, all of those things that are involved, rather than what? Labeling them because of some element of their identity. And for Jews, the criteria was not faith. In the German world, the criteria was blood. And it led to a very unusual thing. The last building standing in the Warsaw Ghetto was a Roman Catholic church. It was frequented by people who were Roman Catholic priests, Roman Catholic nuns, Roman Catholic parishioners, all of whom were defined by the Nazi government as Jews. So they were worshiping Catholics defined as Jews. Again, blood, not identity.
As we continued our tour, you pointed out a number of things, and it's just too many to go into right now, but another thing that you pointed out were these series of illustrations done by someone who was observing what was happening, and then he later offered testimony, and you said that this person, through his drawings, those drawings were the testimony.
We all know that there are Holocaust memoirs by survivors. We all know that there were diaries taken by, you know, written in the situation by people who were victims, the most famous of which is Diary of Anne Frank. Memoirs like Elie Wiesel's Night or Primo Levi's Survival in Auschwitz. I worked as president and CEO of the Shoah Foundation, and we took the testimony of 52,000 survivors in 32 countries in 57 countries in 32 languages, all of whom offered video testimony. But there were a unique group of artists who were in the camps who didn't offer us written testimony, who didn't offer us verbal testimony. They offered us art as testimony, and the artist testimony of the drawings that they drew to document what they experienced.
The complete, compelling interview with Dr. Barenbaum is on the companion podcast to this program and can be downloaded on the iHeartRadio app. Coming up, we ask the big question, why Jews? But first, this is the KFI News special, Hate, Modern Antisemitism on KFI AM 640.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. This is the KFI News special, Hate, Modern Antisemitism. I'm Steve Gregory. In our final segment of the program, we ask the question, why are Jews a target? Here's Rabbi Abraham Cooper of the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles.
Well, I think for the most part of the last 2,000 years, we were the other. We were always the minority in places like Europe and in across North Africa. We didn't pray the same way as the main societies prayed. And back then, there were no such things as human rights. We were just an easy mark, say that, you know, from Christian theology back in the Middle Ages, was that Jewish people deserved to suffer and to be treated second and third class and maybe be in ghettos because they didn't accept Jesus as their savior. So not to kill him, but not to admit them either in terms of the mainstream. And, you know, coming into the modern period of nationalism, well, the Germans, the Nazis, of course, took it to the ultimate, saying the Jews didn't deserve to live. They were outside parasites. Never mind that, you know, many German Jews served with distinction in World War I in the German military, not just in Britain or France or the U.S. And so, you know, for the communists, we're capitalists. For the capitalists, we're communists. You know, ask people who are ethnic Chinese in certain countries in South Asia, where they're not the majority, but a minority. Sometimes you pay the price because of the perceived perception that you're doing too well in life. And it's, but we live in a democracy. We're supposed to have a level playing field. And that should not bring about hatred. But again, I think it should be curiosity. We live in a, now with between the internet, social media, and the fact we live in a democracy. If you have an interest to find out, like, what do Jews do in synagogue? Well, there are a lot of synagogues in the area. You know, there are plenty of books to read up. There are, Southern California has no shortage of rabbis of all stripes and orientations. So I think the most important thing also that I learned in my global travels is this tremendous curiosity. I've learned to also deal with my own stereotypes when I go overseas. And it's sometimes a difficult wall to bring down, but it's worthwhile the effort. So education at the end of the day is what Mr. Wiesenthal said would be the key. And the other part that he also, I think I saw by example and always remembered is we need to build new alliances and friendships. When you talk about friendships and alliances, it means that not only do we need help when we have a problem, when our houses of worship are under potential attack, but we have to be there for the other communities.
This is Todd Spitzer, the District Attorney of Orange County, California, and creator of that county's hate crime task force.
Well, Jews like Asians, I think, have a reputation of being educated and successful. And the argument against Jews has been that they control the world, that they control the media, that they're manipulative, right? That they're rich and they control the government and decision making. And, you know, they have to be put down literally and figuratively for that reason. So that has been obviously the mantra and the myth that has percolated. I think that's why you've seen so much Asian hate. Asians have been so successful here in America, academically and financially and with the family structure. So I just think that groups that have been successful and assimilated well in this country, even though it's a melting pot, there's been a lot of resentment. And especially when the haters feel like they're being pushed out of power, they want to go after the groups who they feel are jeopardizing their status in society.
And finally, Brandon Cohen, the head of school at a Jewish day school in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, I laugh because it's like, you know, the question that's been, I think, hanging over us for all time, right? I mean, this kind of hatred towards Jews has been around for thousands of years. And it's the short answer is I don't know, and I feel like any insight I have into it feels like not comprehensive enough to fully explain it. So I'm hesitant to even like put something out there that really even pretends to understand it. You know, I think, at least in my experience, more in sort of modern Judaism and really, you know, the generations that I've been exposed to, is I think Jews are really good at assimilation. And And it's a culture that, you know, values education, hard work, and those things. And I think that anytime...
I'm sorry, I had to interrupt because what I want to get to the heart of is, what possesses someone to put flyers at someone's doorstep? What possesses someone to put a banner on an overpass?
Yeah.
What possesses people to scream epithets? And why?
I appreciate the question, and I ask the same question every time these things happen. I don't know, and I don't understand it. I really, it's not that I haven't thought about it, and it's not that I don't like, but I feel like my theories on it change depending on who is the person or what their background is that's doing it, because it doesn't make sense. It's like, in some ways, because it comes from so many different places, and it presents itself in so many, you know, all over the world in different ways, it feels like it's like when you're looking for a group to blame, it's one of the first groups you go to. But it's hard to, I can't say why. Like, I can't say why. So I wish I could give you some articulate answer that might add some, you know, something to the conversation.
And I think that might be the answer.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's going to be one of life's mysteries.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
That's where I stand. That's how I feel.
Hate, Modern Anti-Semitism is a production of the KFI News Department for iHeartMedia Los Angeles. Robin Bertolucci, Program Director, Chris Little, News Director. The program is produced by Steve Gregory and Jacob Gonzalez. The complete interviews with these guests and more are available on the Hate, Modern Anti-Semitism podcast, available on the iHeartRadio app. To learn more about anti-Semitism and how you can join the conversation, go to translatehate.org. That's translatehate.org. This is KFI AM 640. Time now for a news update.
Hey, you've been listening to the John Cobalt Show podcast. You can always hear the show live on KFI AM 640 from 1 to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday. And of course, anytime on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.